You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is our review of Unhinged.
Come on, man. Go!
You know what a courtesy tap is, young man?
Sounds like this. It's light. It's friendly.
I'm sure that's what your mom meant to do.
No, it's not.
Mom!
Having a kind of a hard time lately.
I'm sorry.
You accept my apology?
Just ignore him.
Well, if you could just do the same, we could press reset.
I don't have anything to apologize for. Can you go, please?
Ma'am, are you okay?
I'm pretty sure the guy in that truck's following me.
He's road raging.
Why don't you just chill, man? Go your own way.
I don't think you really know what a bad day is. But you're gonna find out.
That man stole my phone. Andy?
I'm sitting here. I'm waiting for you.
Whose phone is this?
I'm right across from your friend.
Hey, listen to me. He's not a friend, okay? He's a psycho who came after me today.
This is where your first lesson begins.
Give me my phone.
Put him back on this goddamn phone!
No, I can't do that.
What do you want?
I need you to learn what a bad day really is. I need you to learn how to say you're sorry.
And you're gonna learn.
Through violence and retribution.
Sounds like you're waking up.
I'm wide awake.
You better bring your A game. Because you're gonna need it.
All right, everybody. You were just listening to the trailer for Unhinged, and the story is as follows. A mother leans on her horn at the wrong time to the wrong guy. Road rage doesn't begin to describe what he's about to do to her and everyone she knows. The film is starring Russell Crowe, Karen Pistorius, Gabriel Bateman, Jimmy Simpson, and Austin P. McKenzie. It is directed by Derek Borte and written by Carl Ellsworth. Joining me for this podcast review, I have Nate Adams.
Hello, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on board. And also, Rafael Motomayor.
Hello, hello.
Two guests, not my regular podcasting crew today. Listen, Unhinged is opening up at a very interesting time, right?
Absolutely. It's crazy to think that theaters are actually starting to open back up again. And I know that obviously some people, you know, like I know, Matt, you're in New York City. There's really no options for you to see it in theaters. So thankfully you were able to get access to it. But I think we were also talking off camera a little bit about, you know, what are you going to do for these other bigger upcoming releases? You know, like you're not going to get the Tenets. I think they're going straight to theaters with that one. So it's definitely an interesting time for film journalists.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what we're going to do is we're going to continue to keep trying to cover the movies that we can here on the Next Best Picture podcast. And I might have to reach out to some guests here or there. And, you know, we'll just do what we can as we go through this transitional period as the country slowly starts to allow access to movie theaters once again. I think that we all probably, I'm guessing, saw it via early access. I'm assuming, right? No one saw it in a movie theater?
I actually saw it in a movie theater because...
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Wow.
Here in Norway, opened slightly earlier than in the U.S.
Oh.
And things are pretty normal here, at least in the part where I live in.
What's that like?
They're only closed for like a month. So by the time I went to see this movie, I wasn't taking a huge risk on anything. And I thought, sure, why not? Russell Crowe, might as well... write about it, do my job and everything. So yeah, it was a surreal experience, to say the least.
All right. Yeah, no, I definitely can understand how surreal it must be. I mean, I know for myself, the next time I probably go to a movie theater, seeing everybody wearing masks is definitely going to be odd, to say the least. But, you know, this is the world that we live in right now. And Solstice Studios, brand new studio, this is their first release. They were very adamant early on that this was going to be the movie that people would run back to see in theaters when theaters reopened. Unhinged was going to be the movie that saved cinema, not Tenet. They were hell-bent on getting Unhinged out there first. And you know what? They wanted it, like, I mean, it was in a guinea pig position to see if people would go back and then go see a bigger film like Tenet. Everybody kind of knew that, but credit to Solstice Studios for, like, really just embracing the get there first aspect of it all. Okay, so the movie itself.
Interesting, to say the least.
I guess you could call it that. Raphael, what about you? What are, like, some opening general thoughts?
Well, if they wanted this to be the movie that lured people back into theaters, they should have really reconsidered that before. It is not a terrible movie. If you want to spend... I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, taking out of context, you could certainly do worse. But when it is the first movie many people are going to see in theaters after so many months stuck at home, you probably want something that gives a better impression than Unhinged.
Yeah, I actually think it hurts the movie-going experience rather than help it, if I'm being completely honest.
I think that if this was a normal film year, this would not be getting anywhere near the press or the coverage that it has received.
Absolutely.
And that can be said for a lot of movies in 2020 this year, I would say.
I think you're absolutely right. This is definitely a canary in the coal mine situation. And I know Solstice Studios, their model now is they're going to be the savior. They're going to make low budget thrillers, you know, maybe some comedies for, I think they said this cost somewhere in the realm of $30 million. So this is a relatively low risk, because if it comes out in theaters now, it doesn't need $100 million to break even. So if it just makes, you know, $30 million at the domestic box office, which maybe is plausible, I don't know, we'll see after this weekend, then, you know, right, they're getting all this extra publicity that in any other year, Matt, like you said, it would not be getting.
It's already made $9 million, I think, at the box office as of right now on that $33 million budget. And, you know, to your point, credit where credit is due, I guess.
Right.
It's really, really nice to hear that there are people out there who are still devoting money to the mid-budget, you know, adult drama.
That's not going to streaming.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I, for a long time, have felt that, you know, those were just slowly dying off. And, you know, with recent box office failures from Annapurna and A24 playing things so close to the chest, mm-hmm. because with them, you know, their movies don't typically become big box office successes. When they do, though, they like to try and be very conservative with that money that they bring in.
Like, yeah, because Uncut Gems was huge for them, I think, right?
Yeah, Hereditary was big. Lady Bird did pretty well for them. But, I mean, those movies are pretty rare considering to their right. output of content. So
Absolutely.
The business model has been, you know, faltering for a little while now. And like, you know, you guys just said, Unhinged is in a good position until Tenet and a few other movies release slowly over the next couple of weeks, where it could make back that budget and break even at the very least. I don't know if it'll be able to cover marketing costs. That's a whole other story. But
yeah, but I think they've gotten a bunch of free publicity, though. Like, the theaters are advertising it for them, right? Because they're like,
true.
This is the movie. They're getting it back in theaters. And I don't know. I think Russell Crowe's PSA was pretty darn good.
Going back to the movie, too, I mean, Nate, general opening thoughts. Like, what did you think of the movie overall?
Yeah, I couldn't. I could definitely tell that it was made for a big screen experience, because I didn't get to see it in the theater. You know, maybe if I did, it might have been it might have heightened my experience a little bit. But watching it at home, in like road rage thrillers, can usually be kind of fun. You know, like The Hitcher or Duel. You know, all that stuff. This
yeah.
just didn't work for me. I wasn't on board with whatever Russell Crowe was definitely going for something. I don't know what it was, but it was something. And I can appreciate that, but the movie just didn't work for me.
Yeah, my big thing with this movie is I think it would have been a killer short. Have Russell Crowe be your star for your short. Have the incident on the road, honk the horn, he gets pissed. Make it just a movie that takes place on the road. Yeah. We don't have to go off the road into extreme implausibility, which is what this movie ultimately does. And I think it could have been just a really badass short, you know?
I didn't even think about it that way.
It's the minute that they get off the road and he gains access to her cell phone where I started to roll my eyes numerous times because I just could not believe how convenient some of the storytelling beats became, and also just how incredibly preposterous it all was.
Yeah, that cell phone thing, like, I can skip over a lot of things that this movie does, but the cell phone thing, because it's so important to everything else that happens, it just becomes a snowball effect that if you are not 100% on board with the idea that an unlocked cell phone is common norm in today's day and age, and just how much information just so easily accessible on an unlocked phone, then you're just going to roll your eyes at like 75% of the movie.
And the movie takes itself seriously. You know, if this movie was a little bit campy, I think,
oh, yeah,
I could have let some of those, you know, leaps of logic go. But the movie really does, like, go the serious route where it wants this to be almost like a, not horror, but, you know, just a, you know, adult thriller, if you will. And it wasn't a fun adult thriller. So, yeah, I kind of have to hold those leaps of faith against it.
There are definitely some moments where it leans into its campy territory. You know, there's a scene at the end where they're like, a character says, like, it's almost like a yippee-ki-yay moment. And I just
The badass 1980s Final Kill line?
Yeah. And I was just like, no, if it had been like that the whole movie, I'd have been like, this might have been something.
I have to admit, I grinned and I laughed at that line. And I freaking loved every single second of that because it was a throwback
moment.
And
that was good. It had good energy. Yeah. But you're absolutely right what you're saying about the cell phone thing. And also the fact that he can just conveniently go on this rage and nobody's stopping him. Like, how long does it take police to locate a man that in the middle of a diner bludgeons a man with a coffee cup and everybody's recording it?
Or in this day and age, nobody in that diner like runs up and tries to restrain the guy.
Yeah.
Like, there's no heroes, you know, no great citizens that want to like just try to jump in and stop the bad guy. Come on. In this day and age, there's always somebody
happened.
Who tries to do that.
It would have been a social warrior trying to something, right?
Yeah, exactly. I just like, I couldn't believe it at times. And there just was too many moments like that where I'm watching this movie and I want to have fun with it. You know, Russell Crowe, all right, on a personal level, we all know Russell Crowe is a piece of shit, right? So let's just get that out of the way. He's a bad boy. It's very, very, very clear that his best days are behind him and Hollywood has kind of shunned him out. Yeah. The only thing now that he can do with his career is supporting roles or a lead in something like this.
Well, I think what was the last big thing he did? Was it Les Mis when he co-starred as with Hugh Jackman? That's got to be it, right? As far as
I mean, 8 years ago, sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that was his peak. He's done.
His last, like, high-profile, like, prestige role, I guess, was a supporting part in Boy Erased.
And then he was also in The Kelly Gang, but he was also in it for 5 minutes.
And that's also a VOD movie this year, too.
And it was made in Australia. Yeah.
His career is definitely gone down for sure, and a lot of that I think is because I think he is blacklisted by a lot of people in Hollywood for his bad boy behavior and a lot of the, you know, terrible things that he's done to people over the years. So, you know, this is the best we're going to get from Russell Crowe at this point in his life, and I'm not here to fat shame Russell Crowe or anything like that, but I will say that his physical presence, his screen presence, is still very commanding. And he still has that magnetic persona that when you watch him on the screen, you are drawn to him as an actor. I can't take that away from him.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to see. That's what is so frustrating about the movie in a way, because had it been slightly changed in tone, as you say, they had dived a little bit more into the absurdity of the situation and played more into Russell Crowe as this big intimidating guy, it would have been a fun thriller. But then they finally take it so seriously, and he taking it seriously is one thing, but the rest of the movie playing along, that's when it becomes a bit of a disconnect between what the characters are doing and how the movie's reacting to it. But Russell Crowe is for sure the saving grace of this movie.
Yeah, it's like everybody in the film can't get on his level. He is like operating at such a different velocity that the supporting characters around him don't know what to do. It's like I felt like Russell Crowe was stuck in a movie that they didn't know what to do with him.
Yeah. If you're going in expecting just some B movie level drills, I think this movie will deliver on that. You just gotta kind of not ask too many questions while the plot unfolds. Like I said, once he gets her cell phone and it's like a few minutes of scrolling through her cell phone, now he knows like everything about her life and everyone that she's connected to, and he starts like hunting down.
He like transfers money from her bank account.
I mean, come on. You do realize that the apps within somebody's phone do ask for passwords. Like, she can't be a person that has the same password for every... It's just so ridiculous, you know?
Well, they set that up in the beginning, right? Because the kid's like, Mom, it's very dangerous to not have your phone locked or something, right?
But even if you don't have your phone locked, my Chase app still requires me to sign in with a password.
Fair enough. Maybe it was like a Face ID or something, and he just managed to hack it.
I don't know. I just don't know. I just think that once the movie goes that route and he starts doing these personal attacks on her family members and things like that, it's supposed to make him more psychotic and intimidating and, you know, a threat. But instead, the movie just lost me at that point. I was very on board, though, in, you know, the opening scenes and just the relatable moment of having somebody on the road honk their horn at you, maybe because they are having a bad day, maybe because they just are a road rager, whatever it is. I mean, I'm not a horn honker. I really don't do that. I've never yelled at someone through my car window.
And that's crazy because you're in New York City.
Yeah, but I can tell you I have had that happen to me, though. So that was a very relatable situation for the movie to kind of start with. But then they also, in the opening credits, have like all this newsreel footage of accidents on the highway, of people being aggressive with their driving, and just aggression in general. Like those, if like the world is a powder keg and we're all just getting ready to explode because everybody's just so angry about everything all the time. And I think there is an interesting commentary there. Don't get me wrong. But the movie mishandles it, and I think it really squashes the social responsibility aspect of whatever commentary it was going for there.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. It tries to, even for as much as it looks and feels like a B movie, it also tries to be a serious movie, and it does try to give a message. It's just that what it does and what the plot does goes so much against that message that it just gives you a really big whiplash. And you were saying the lack of the really bad policemen in the movie. That opening credits also tries to justify that by saying that for some reason there's been a wave of like police quitting their jobs and like there are not enough police in the country. And I was like, I mean, if you are trying to use that as an excuse for what happens in the plot, then at least make more of an effort to separate the world of the movie from the real world, because there's definitely not a lack of police officers in the country.
No.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And especially with everything that we've all gone through in 2020 this year throughout the entire world. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The timing of that cannot be any more poor. Now, I don't mind if you have an imposing viewpoint on that matter. That's perfectly all well and good, but you just need to execute and sell it well. And I just don't think the movie does that.
Good on Russell Crowe for figuring out how, when she was in the gas station for 0.5 seconds, to throw LoJack on that iPad into track her car.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Seriously.
Sorry, I just...
Oh, man. And then that's the everything, too.
Tech guru.
I can understand if, you know, you want to also make a movie about how everybody is on the verge of snapping at some point, right? And it's only going to take that one thing that's going to set everybody over the edge. Now, I can totally buy that, because whenever we see, like, horrific acts of violence, like, on the news or just crazy shit that happens in general, it is because somebody has snapped, right? And it's because they can't take it anymore and they just take out all that aggression and everything else on others. And so, okay, fine. Russell Crowe, he's had his breaking point. He's had his moment. Here's my other big problem with the movie. They set it up as his wife has cheated on him and he goes and he kills the kills whoever the guy is that she's cheated on him with, bludgeons her, and then burns the house down. And that was presumably the night before. Now, the next day, or the next morning, he's still on the road, and he comes across Karen Pistorius's character, and like the aggression and the rage just continues, and it extends beyond even her to other people as well. And I just had, like I said, I just had a slight bit of trouble buying into how long this tirade, this streak, like, could just continue with this guy inflicting all this horrible violence on people over one thing that happened to him. Now, if the movie had set up that there were multiple things that were happening to him, it wasn't just his wife, if the movie had done a better job of maybe building us up to other elements that contributed towards this breaking point, maybe I could have then balanced it out and, you know, judged his reaction a little bit better. But it just seems like an overreaction, and I just didn't buy it.
Right. They do try to say that he also got into an accident at his job and he lost it because of it, that they fired him. And he was like angry about that. But I do agree that it doesn't give you enough of a justification for what happens. But at the same time, the movie, it does both two things. It tries to build him as a big, over-the-top threat, sort of an enhanced view of our world, but it also really tries to make you feel bad for him. And I was like, it gave me a bit of whiplash, because the more crazy, insanely violent things he does, the more the movie tries to sympathize with him, and it felt not only wrong, but like it didn't accomplish it. The execution was really bad, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with all what you guys are saying. Like, so you're telling me, because this the character, I think her character's name is, I want to say Courtney, she honks the horn and scoots by him, and then he is all of a sudden like, this is just going to set off like the lengths that he goes to make her life a living hell is so unrealistic. And that's what kind of took me out of the movie. Like, when he walked into the diner and he like uncovered that she had a meeting at a diner that morning at like 11 a.m. and walks in and just – and it momentarily is just like, how did this happen? Because she didn't say – she didn't apologize for scooting by him at a red light.
Her name is Rachel, by the way.
Rachel.
It's all right. But I agree with you, because like – also, too, the minute that he sits down across from Jimmy Simpson at that diner, and he says, "Oh, I'm a friend of Rachel," and Jimmy Simpson's character just believes it and just goes with it. Like, I would never, a complete stranger.
Not in 2020.
Absolutely not. Show me a photo on your phone of you two together. Something. Like, no way. No way. And Jimmy Simpson's so casual about it too, you know?
Yeah, they want you to suspend that disbelief, but it's hard. It's tough. And also, can we like say too, I don't know if this came up on your guys' radar while you were watching the film, but the threat against women, like violence against women, I don't know if that was kind of off-putting a little bit too.
You've watched them in unforgettable adventures, love affairs, and tragedies. Now it's time to hear their own remarkable stories. From the makers of Death of a Rockstar and Death of a Sports Star, this is Death
Ready.
Of a Film Star.
And action.
Starring Heath Ledger, Marilyn Monroe, Chadwick Boseman, Robin Williams, Carrie Fisher, and Bruce Lee. Search for Death of a Film Star in your podcast app. You've seen them tell stories. Now it's time to tell theirs.
Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it.
I was very, very disturbed by the fact that there is violence inflicted not only on women, but also on minors in this movie, too.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot about the kid in the attic. You're right.
I was deeply troubled by it. And once again, like I said, if the movie had a different tone about it, you know, if it was going to go full on campy, all right, like, I don't know, maybe it depends, right?
Yeah.
But if it's going to go serious, then you better have all of your logic and everything else for me to buy into this justified. Because, listen, I'm not saying that if you want to have a very, very despicable character, he needs to do despicable things. And sometimes targeting women and children is a part of that.
Right.
And there are a lot of movies that have done that sort of thing that have made antagonists and villains out to be cold-blooded evil bastards. And we hate them and we want to see nothing more than for them to get their comeuppance at the end of the movie. Happens all the time, right?
Right.
I just watched The Patriot the other day and Oscar Isaac. what's his name again? The villain in that, Isaac.
Oh, Jason. Jason Isaac.
Jason Isaacs, yes.
Lucius Malfoy. Yeah.
Great villain. Kills women and kids and everything else. And we hate him, you know, and we really, really buy into it. And we're not as a society looking at that movie and saying, oh, this disturbs me, but it disturbs me for the wrong reasons. It's disturbing me for the exact right reasons. This is a movie where it disturbed me for the wrong reasons because the rest of the movie was not well put together to be able to sustain such a uncomfortable feeling that I got while watching it.
But even a movie like The Hitcher, I'll even use the remake of The Hitcher with Sean Bean as a good example. Like,
yeah, Sean Bean. I love that one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the violence is mostly, there's a lot of the violence we see a lot off camera. Like, there's a scene in the film where, like, he murders a family, but we don't see it. We just see the aftermath of it. And it's 10 times more effective that way than seeing Russell Crowe try to strangle a kid.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, when I come back to the disconnect between what the characters do and what the movie, how the movie, what the movie thinks of them. Because, again, we are so clearly supposed to be against Russell Crowe's character. And as you say, like, he does horrible, unspeakable things. And yet the movie keeps putting a sympathetic line on him and also kind of saying that, agreeing with his stand that, yeah, if only this woman had apologized to him for doing just honking a horn, then none of this would happen. It's not that he was disturbed from the beginning. It's not his fault. Is that Rachel should have apologized because she was in the wrong. Because the movie does try to paint her as this really messed up character who's like hit rock bottom, the same as Russell Crowe's character. She's late for everything. She doesn't have control over her life. And if only she wasn't super stressed and she was about to burst out the same, like, they're trying to compare the two and put them in as two sides of the same coin when it's so clearly not the case.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to take away daily stress from people's lives and devalue it by any means whatsoever. But I agree with you that the movie is deliberately trying to create a contrast between those two characters and how they are dealing with the stresses of their everyday lives. And once again, the social commentary is just completely mishandled. And I don't think that they were responsible in the way that they depicted it in this movie. So, you know, what do you do then at that point, right? Because now you've angered a large portion of your audience who are going to watch this and, you know, look at it through that lens. Well, you just hope that they deliver now on the thrills, right? And I got to admit, I have to say, 2020, it's been, you know, it's been a pretty rough year when it comes to movies of this sort, I guess I would say. Yeah. And the simple sight of seeing a car crash, a stunt, a car flipping, I have to admit, it brought me a small speck of joy in my life because I've just missed car stunts so much.
Yeah, that freeway chase scene is probably the best scene in the movie. The whole when they're like trying to give the bait and switch and then there's a huge car pileup. I think you're right. That's absolutely the most efficient scene in the film. And it highlights maybe the aspirations. And it kind of shows too what Solstice Studios and like what their programming is going to look like. You know, maybe if they take that energy and they harness it into something bigger, you know, they could make something great.
Truly. Yeah, I think so. Once again, you know, the mid-budget adult drama or thriller, there is a place for it in the world. It just takes a studio to be able to back it. And, you know, it would be nice if it had a better script.
Yeah, there's not a lot of tension, though. That's really what hurts it the most.
Yeah, and it's weird, too, because the writer, Carl Ellsworth, this is not the first time he does. He has done competent thrillers with some kind of social commentary before. He wrote, in my opinion, vastly underrated Red Eye, directed by Wes Craven.
Oh, and Red Eye.
Remake of Disturbia. And both of those movies, they do have something to say, but they're also, and they deliver on the thrills. But here, he tries to do the same thing almost, and he vastly overestimates his handling on the social commentary aspect. But the directing, like as you say, the stunts, they make it an entertaining watch. It just whether or not you are open to embark on that journey at this moment in time.
Do you guys think it would have been better if we didn't know anything about their backgrounds? It had started on the freeway and they just been angry and like we didn't know anything about them. Would that have made this more effective?
It would have worked if it was a short.
Right.
Yeah.
We could take our own feelings and our own emotions and place them onto those characters.
Fair enough.
And I think it would have been a little bit more effective that way.
I think even without having to cut the movie down to a short, I think if it had been just like The Strangers, for instance, that also that was just a random person goes into your house and does crazy things and just wants to torture you for no reason whatsoever, I feel like that would have been not necessarily good, just maybe a little bit better in regards to how the movie presents the events or the action and the plot.
Yeah. All right. I want to move this over to final thoughts on Unhinged. Anything that we didn't talk about that you want to talk about, I'll ask Nate first.
So I kind of want to go back to the whole cell phone thing, gas station bits. Like, you know, why did Rachel not have her phone on her is another thing. You kept it in your car. I mean, everybody these days, you have your phone. And then second, she kept picking up the phone. He kept calling. Like, I think I would have been calling everybody, family, friends. I'd have been calling, you know, her brothers living at home. You know what I mean? Like straight to get your brother and then go to the school. Because the school isn't going to give out your son. Like, he can't come in and take your, you know, there's security guards. So that's just like another implausible thing that I was just thinking about the whole movie. But like you said, everything you guys are saying, like there was potential here for this movie to like truly jump into the stratosphere of like great grungy grindhouse B movies.
Yeah.
Like Death Proof or something, you know?
That's what I was hoping for. That's really what I was hoping for. I mean, even when I got the first trailer, that was the hope.
It just sucks as this is the movie. This is the movie that's supposed to be bringing back people in the theaters. And I get it's a canary in the coal mine situation. You know, somebody's got to go first. But like people that are maybe feel comfortable starting to go back in the theaters and they go see this and they're disappointed. Like they're like, well, that wasn't worth it.
And then they're reminded of why, you know, movie theaters are in the situation that they're in again, despite COVID.
They're going to be like, I could have got that on Netflix for nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Raphael, what about you?
Yeah, as I said, I think it's as a thriller, it works as a bit of an action B-movie thriller. It works well enough. Russell Crowe is really, for everything else that he does, he's really good in this role specifically. It's just that whenever the action pauses and you start to, the movie wants to say something, it becomes really muddled. But otherwise, if you literally have nothing better to see, you could do worse than Unhinged.
I mean, I think a majority of the country right now has absolutely nothing to watch. They're not like us where, I mean, I've been drowning in content for months with the amount of stuff that I've been sent.
No kidding.
Because I have the time. In a normal year, most of the stuff that we've been sent to, you know, watch, I probably would not have gotten around to watch because I would have been focused more on the Big Ten polls and the larger film releases that were coming out on a weekly basis. You know what I mean?
Well, and a lot of those were coming into theaters. We just were like the Lovebirds. I'm assuming the Defy Bloods would have had some kind of theatrical release that I would have had to have gone to a screening for before a screener. So like we've been lucky, right, to get this stuff at home, which I'm grateful for, right? And having the time is nice.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So my final thoughts on Unhinged, I really don't have any other final thoughts. I think we covered it pretty well. We do our grade system out of 10, no 0.5s. I'm going to give Unhinged a 4 because even though I was originally going to go lower with it, but I couldn't deny that at the end of the day, even though I'm not positive on it, I still didn't walk away from it thinking it was like one of the worst movies I saw this year. Yeah. And I think a large part of it had to do with how much Russell Crowe kept me invested in the movie. And I also think, and maybe I'm grading on a curve here, but I was starving for some B-level thrills and I got them. So, you know, I'll give it a 4. I think I'm being more than generous, though, with that grade, in my opinion. Rafael, what about you?
Yeah, I think I would go with a 4 as well, if only because, again, you won't get bored and the movie is fast-paced enough.
Yeah.
But it's just that, man, if it had been any other week, I would not say go see this movie. Like, if you have, again, it's just because of the lack of options here. And even then, you could always go back and watch older movies, but for what it does, it does have some memorable moments, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Nate, what about you?
I'm actually gonna be the down on this one. I'm going like a 1 or probably a 2. I'll give it a 2 just because of everything you guys made me raise it a little bit. Everything didn't on a level for me, didn't work for me. And Raphael, to your credit, I mean, you did get to see it in the theater, and I wonder if I had seen it in a theater, might have maybe the sound system and the big screen, I might have definitely elevated it a little bit. But you know what, Russell Crowe, like, I can appreciate what he was doing. He was trying to strive for something, and some parts of it worked, but most of it didn't. Didn't care for the violence against women and children like we talked about. So yeah, I'm gonna stick firm at a 2.
Yeah, totally understandable for sure. All right, and then usually we have a section for discussing Oscar prospects, but lol.
Yeah. Well, let's like maybe, I don't know, like a Razzie or something.
I wouldn't be surprised, actually. That would be, yo, Russell Crowe appearing at the Razzies. There you go. Why not?
I'd buy into it.
Sure. He just comes like in character, accepts the award, just grinning his teeth at everybody, grinding.
Is there any sound, like technical stuff maybe? I don't think so.
No. I mean, I've come to the conclusion that even in this crazy, wacky year that we've had, I was trying to give a little bit. I was really trying to fight for the smaller movies that would never come close to the Oscars. But the more that we go further and further into this year, the more I'm starting to realize, oh, no, the typical Oscar contenders are still going to be the typical Oscar contenders.
Yeah. Right.
So, no, absolutely nothing for Unhinged. All right, Raphael, thank you so much for joining me here today. Nate, same to you as well. Raph, where can they find your work on the internet?
Well, I'm all over the place. I'm writing for The Playlist every weekend. I'm a weekend editor there. And I do work at Observer. I have my review of Tenet early next week at Collider. So check that out when it goes up.
Really, really jealous. Really, really excited to see what you have to say about it. And I miss our festival experiences together, my friend. I feel like we were spoiled this year. Could you imagine if we had not been at Sundance this year, what this year would have been like for us?
I'm jealous of you both. I'd be gearing up for Toronto right now. I'd be getting ready to go to TIFF, and yep. I'm sad.
Yeah. It's a crazy time. Nate, where can they find your work on the internet?
Yeah, so most of my stuff, you can find me at theonlycritic.com, or you can search Nate Adams on Rotten Tomatoes. It'll take you back to that. And then I'm in Michigan, so some folks, I do write for some local publications, Clinton Local, Daily Telegram, stuff like that. But that's all regional, local stuff. So yeah, theonlycritic.com. I'll have my review of Tenet next week as well. Seeing Tenet, not next week, the week after, but it's coming soon.
All right. And I don't know when I'm seeing Tenet.
Yeah, hope they get to see it soon, man.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. All right, you've been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. You can find me at Next Best Picture on Twitter. And you can subscribe to us on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, Acast, CastBox, and also on Spotify. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate the feedback and the support, which you can lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you will get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening. As always, we shall see you all next time.
Hello, this is Gary Chahot welcoming you to check out the French History Podcast. Our main show covers the history of France from the first humans until present. If you liked Mike Duncan's The History of Rome and wanted a similar program covering the land of beauty, culture, and love, we are exactly that. We also host world-renowned scholars who have delivered guest episodes on their specialties, including 18th century pirates, revolutionary booksellers in 20th century Paris, the special friendship between the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, and numerous others. Learn what you love and listen to the French History Podcast today.